The stock answer I always give is the coffee. Just stock, you know.
But they're stuck down in New York now, so it can't be just the coffee.
It's not just the coffee. It really isn't. It's the good, isn't that funny? The New Yorker responds like, no, just shush. I'm just telling you coffee. No, it was actually, I'm not even going to hold back on this. I'm from Queens. I also lived in Brooklyn right before I moved. But I wanted to move to San Francisco. Sorry, Portland. You were second choice. First love was going to be San Francisco.
You just broke Portland's heart.
I am so sorry, Portland. Please still be a member.
Yeah,
like, I'm just... But you know what? I'll even say it. Portland is Portland. I actually like fell in love with Portland as soon as I got here. It's just, it doesn't have to be New York. It doesn't have to be, sorry to say, you're not going to be Queens. You're not going to be Brooklyn. Don't try. It's really great to be Portland.
Words of wisdom.
Indeed. Thank you, Pam.
Yeah, Pam, congratulations on the new position and best of luck in all your plans.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
See y'all next week.
This is KBOO Portland. Up next, Right to Survive Radio. First, a little info that we want to pass on to you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge in Portland. Holding On to the Sky is an original play about earthquake preparedness, which weaves together stories of disaster, gentrification, health access, addiction, recovery, and resilience. Again, that's Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge, 4834 North Lombard Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm. on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Faye with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
This is your host, Lisa Faye, with Threat to Survive Radio, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, in the heart of Portland, Oregon. Where are they now? Tonight's show is dedicated to a small number of folks who agreed to be interviewed that have made the transition from houseless to being housed. Now that they have housing, they still continue their activism, advocating for the houseless on issues that are a concern for all of us. They may have left the outside elements, the outdoors, but not the community. They are still giving back. Where are they now? Join me as I listen in on their stories.
We'll be right back.
Bouffard from Right to Survive Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon on Ground Zero in the Houseless Community. And the topic of our show is the afterbirth effect. Now that you was houseless, now you got house, what are you doing? So today we're here with
Roy Pascoe.
Hey Roy, how long were you living on the streets before you came to Write the Dream to?
Oh, I'd say about 3 years.
And then you found Write the Dream to. How was that experience?
It was good. I got into becoming a member at Write the Dream 2 after I learned more about it. Got moved into a tent, which was a lot better than the sidewalk. Wasn't harassed by the police or anything because they're not allowed to even be on the premises. While I was on the streets, I was always constantly harassed by the police. It was hard to find a good place to sleep all night long. And Write the Dream 2 made a real big difference. It helped a lot.
And one of the things that Write the Dream 2 is set up for is for people to get sleep. And in our theory in the houseless community, we believe that once you get sleep, you can think better on how to become productive.
Yeah, exactly. Because while you're living on the streets, constantly being harassed by the police and all that, it's really hard to get any sleep. Being in Write to Dream 2, I had ample time to get sleep, to be able to think about work, think about housing, think about everyday life as in general.
And you just named some things that a lot of people who live in house don't really understand or grasp that concept. And one of the things you named, right to get housing. Did you, with Write to Dream, stand at Write to Dream 2, did it help you, allow you to look for housing, and are you housed now?
Yeah, it gave me plenty of time to be able to look for housing because I got a good night's sleep. I would do security and do other stuff around, help clean up the place and go to meetings and stuff. But it still, I got enough sleep that I was able to look for housing. And yes, I have finally gotten into housing.
And how long have you been housed?
I've been housed about a little over a year now.
Wow. And how is that going for you?
It's going great. I mean, sometimes I still come out and about and talk to the people I know out in the houseless community and encourage them to try and do the same thing. I tell them some of the steps I've gone through. And part of it was because I got sick with cancer that got me off the streets. But there's also other ways, by constantly looking, getting on lists, going to different housing authorities and housing listings and stuff like that. By trying to be productive and be able to constantly look for it and find a good place to get sleep, like Write to Dream 2, will help to find a place to live.
Because that's one less work.
Exactly.
So now that you're successful in getting off the street, you're successful in getting housing, keeping it, what are you doing now in the houseless community? Are you active, or are you just talking to people, encouraging them? Let the listening audience know how we pay it forward or pay back the community, whatever way you want to call it.
Well, yeah, I try and still stay active. I still go out and talk to people. I'm still involved with PHCC.
And can you explain what PHCC is?
PHCC is Portland Harbor Community Coalition. What that is, we are involved with EPA and DEQ with getting the river cleaned up. There's a Superfund site, it's an 11-mile stretch of the most contaminated part of the river. And that's all done by the industries, corporations, and have polluted the river for several years. It's been noted for at least 150 years that it's been polluted. And we still work with them to try and get the river cleaned up. The fish are contaminated. How to get the fish contaminated, what little we can eat, whether we can eat them or not.
And why did you get involved
in this process with the River Cleaner or PACC? Why did you get involved with PACC?
Well, when I lived in Bremerton, Washington, I was a boater. I lived on a boat, and we could swim in the river. We used to do a lot of fishing, my brothers and I, and that's something we can't do down here anymore. I remember times back when I used to fish in the Willamette River, and it was just fine, but now you can't. Everything's, the water's polluted, the fish are polluted, and I work together with some people, because if everybody doesn't work together on it, then it's not going to get done. We need people to work together and be as one team to be able to get the word out that the river needs to be cleaned up, that the fish are polluted. But if people don't know this, people are just going to end up getting sick.
I think one of the major reasons, because as you stated, the police would move houseless people off the streets. They would move houseless people and chase them into the edge of the river, and that's where a lot of houseless people were living. And we found out that they was growing vegetable and toxic soil and stuff and eating toxic fish. And because we are advocates for the houseless community, you got involved and you're still involved in it. And so what's the next steps?
Well, the next step, we're working on putting together a pamphlet in solidarity with Columbia River Keepers also. We're putting together a pamphlet, putting out the news about the toxicity, and then going out and handing out the pamphlets to the people living on the river. And people are still harassed by the police that are living along the river. They chase them from this spot to another. We're also in solidarity with EPA and DEQ as well. We all work together, do our best to keep the news put out to people, to find out when we're going to clean up the river, how much it's going to cost, and to try and find other housing for the homeless people that are being chased out of those areas because of the river being contaminated and because DEQ and EPA are working on cleaning up the river.
Okay. And this is all we can say, and I want to thank you for being an advocate for the houseless community and for being an example and for getting housed and still helping your community. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This is Ibrahim Mubar from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon in the houseless community on Ground Zero. And the topic of our show is Unhoused to House. And I'm here today with
Loretta Henkel.
Loretta Henkel, how long were you homeless before you came to Right to Dream To?
About a year and a half or two.
And once coming to Right to Dream 2, how did they help you in search or getting help?
Well, I was, they helped me out a long run. They supported me going through TPI. I also went to Central City and got housed from them.
So do you think that you would have accomplished this if it wasn't for Right to Dream 2?
Most likely, yes.
And doing Right to Dream 2, it gave you rest and something where you can look for and you didn't have to worry about looking for a place to sleep.
Yes, okay. That is true.
Okay. So you're inside now, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, and how long have you been living inside?
I was living at my foster home for about a year and a half, and then I moved in with my husband and been living there for almost 7 months and really liking it.
Okay. So now that you're inside, do you look at living on the street a tad bit different or the same way?
About the same.
So now you're inside and you was able to get rest and get housed. What are you doing in the houseless community now? Are you active in the houseless community?
I am active and supporting the houseless that is living on the streets. I am giving them places where I go and went. I'm giving them the opportunity to go look for that. I'm also still supporting at Right to Dream 2.
What are you doing at Right to Dream 2?
Working security, doing the events and the activities. And my most one is supporting my houseless community.
Okay. Are you doing any outreach to any other organization?
I'm trying to get back into doing that.
Okay. And you're also with Portland Harbor Community Coalition, yeah?
Yes, I am, and I've been doing good on going to that meeting.
And what are you all doing there?
Supporting the river and the river cleanup, and getting organizations to come together to help in the long run of the cleanup and the toxics. So we're trying to get supporters and other people from other organizations to come in and pitch in and help.
Okay. And I know you personally, and your route was a difficult route because you was one of the houseless people that Right to Dream 2 was able to help where you can keep your son, but still they want to send you through loops.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to talk about that, or it's too sensitive?
It's too sensitive. Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's really sensitive.
Okay. So
maybe in the future I will talk about it, but right now the way that I was treated regarding my son, I feel really left out. I feel hurt, and I still to this day feel like crying.
So we're going to let you go, and we thank you for continued support in the houseless community.
You're welcome, Ms. Salam.
It's my house, and I'm here. It's my house, and I'm here. There's a welcome mat at the door. If you come on in, you're going to get much more. There's my chair, I put it there.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon on Ground Zero in the houseless community. Topic is, where are they now? And today I'm here with
Willow Frost.
Willow Frost, you've been a member of Right to Dream 2, and you was houseless before. And how was that when you was houseless and a member of Right to Dream 2?
Well, I definitely liked staying at Right to Dream 2, and I liked being a member. Being houseless obviously looked really bad, but I feel like it was better here than some other places that I lived, mostly due to Right to Dream 2 and some of the other services I was able to receive.
And can you tell us what type of personal preference of people that was residing at Right to Dream 2?
Well, most of the people that were members at Right to Dream 2 at the time were and still are activists, people who want to help out the homeless community and really just don't stand injustice.
And how did this have an impact or affect you?
Well, originally I was pretty apathetic towards the political side of things, and I was kind of using Right to Dream 2 as a place to stay. As I kept staying here, as I got to know the members, I really got behind the message and realized that homeless and houseless people are not only criminalized, we're seen as a plague. That needs and needed to change. And so it turned my life into a hellstorm of political movements and supporting of other organizations.
And in doing that, Right to Dream was programmed first to get people rest so they can figure out what to do. And then the second part on being a member was helping people to learn how to fight for their rights by the education given them through Right to Survive. So, and what you're saying, through that, you became more aware or political?
Yeah, I would say that.
Okay.
I would say I did. I would say I became both more aware and more political.
Uh-huh. So did it help you with the rest and a safe place to get to find housing?
It did. After about 2 years?
Yeah.
About 2 years with Right to Dream 2, I got through to Central City Concern, and they gave me permanent housing through Home Forward, and it was through Right to Dream 2 that I was able to make those contacts.
Okay. Now that you're housed, you've been housed for how long?
2 years now.
Wow, that's great. So now that you're housed, Do you consider yourself successful or still an advocate, or what are you doing now to help the houseless community?
Well, for a while, I was mostly focused on just trying to acclimatize to being inside, which is very difficult for anyone who's been outside for any amount of time. But more recently, I have started getting back involved with Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive. Very recently, just this last week, I got on the board of Right to Dream 2. And I'm planning on helping with the with our move and our any of our future political or social statements.
So how does that make you feel that you went from, as you say, let's say for the sake of listening audience, a houseless person to now a political icon working with an organization that speaks up and is effective for houseless people's rights?
Political icon. But using that terminology, it's a little unnerving. But speaking in front of a lot of people does make me a little bit nervous. Uh-huh. But as I've been part of the community and have a general idea of what we need and what needs to happen to make those changes happen, I feel like I'm prepared. I'm very prepared.
And how do you feel when you was houseless and you walked the streets to help houseless people? How do you feel when you see...
Oh, when I see those
people?
When
you walk down the street and you seeing now multitudes of people living on the streets, especially families with children.
I'm very sad, actually. When I was homeless and living on the streets, I didn't really have the time to notice anybody else's situation because I was too busy trying to survive myself. But now when I come out and I see a guy sleeping in a doorway in the middle of the day, shivering because it's winter and all he has is a tarp, it makes me really sad and I want to help that guy out, but I know that I can't physically help everybody. What I have to do is be a part of a larger whole, like Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive, and our allies, to make the city see people.
Okay. And do you think that more people who lived in house should be coming out helping people because they may be next on the street?
I do. Just recently, I had my rent hiked, and it's almost more than I can afford to pay. And I'm on a government subsidy. Anybody who feels like they're part of the lower middle class should at least come and give us a ear.
Is there any one last thing you would like to say to people that are listening to you?
I would. Homeless people are just like you, just like housed people. We have hopes and dreams, and we want to learn. We want nothing more than some place to call home and warm food in our stomachs. So come down and give us a hug. Yeah, come down and give us a hug. Adopt a homeless person.
All right, thank you very much.
We are in the middle of Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM in the heart of Portland, Oregon, and I'm your host, Lisa Fay. Tonight's topic, where are they now? We are hearing from Roy, Loretta, and Willow. I hope you will stay tuned as we are almost halfway through the hour and we still have more interviews with different perspectives to draw upon. All right, enough from your host. Where are they now on Right to Survive Radio?
Take a trip to the city light.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon on Ground Zero in a houseless community. And the title of our show is Where Are They Now? And today I'm here with James,
Melissa,
and Charles.
You all have been homeless before. How long were you homeless, houseless before you got housed?
We were houseless for 7 months.
And in those 7 months, what was the transformation or the process that took place?
Well, we came from Right to Drink, and we came here, and this gave us a chance to get back on our feet and try to find something, because we didn't want to be on the streets.
So was Right to Drink, too, the first place that you all came to?
Yes.
And you didn't live on the street?
No.
Oh, how perfect.
Okay. It was.
So how was it by you all living in Right to Dream 2?
It was great, especially since when we were at Right to Dream 2, I was pregnant with our son, James, so which obviously kind of made it morning sickness. So it made it easier having to deal with the pregnancy, getting back on our feet for getting back into housing and everything. Nah, it was perfect.
And then what process did you do in order to help you get housed?
My process was, this helped us to get out so I can try to find work.
Which you did.
Which I did. And it took some time. And it was stressful for quite a while. But I was determined to get us off the streets and find something. And it wasn't for Right to Dream. That wouldn't have happened.
How long have y'all been housed now?
Almost April. It'll be 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. 3 years. 3 years.
And you're standing here with your lovely son. And how old is he?
He'll be three in August.
In August. Wow. So he marked y'all success,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. Okay. Oh yes.
Okay. So what are y'all doing now?
I'm still working.
I'm going to school and I'm a stay-at-home mom.
Good.
Yeah. So are you all coming back into the houseless community, educating them, or when you see houseless people, do you stop and talk, and do you look at it more different?
No, we try to help. We tell them about Right to Dream.
We always do. Also, by where we live, there's some houseless that are kind of camping there, so when they kind of ask for food, I always have the diary for the journal, the Bible.
Resource.
Yeah, that thing. I always give that to them and tell them to go downtown and try and help out as best I can for them.
Okay. Yeah. And how's working out for you?
Oh, it's great. Being back to my old job.
And living inside is better for you all than living.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
oh yes.
It's great.
Okay.
Love it.
All right. You can go home. Don't have to wake up.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But like I want to say again, it wasn't for Right to Dream.
It wouldn't have happened.
I do believe that so much.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
That's it. All right. Love y'all.
Yeah.
is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today, we're in Ground Zero in Portland, Oregon, in a houseless community. And the topic of our story is, where are they now? And today, I'm here with
Kiki.
Kiki, you've been homeless off and on. You want to tell us something about that?
Basically, what happened was in 2013, when I came to Portland with my Japanese friends, I got my passport stolen from me, so I was stuck here for quite some time. So it took the council quite some time to get my identification and my documentations in order and in check. So it took about 4 months to get them all. But while I was here, I was at the Right to Dream.
Okay.
And then when you came here to Right to Dream, have you been houseless before?
No, I have not. But what I did see was that I see a need for help, and I am capable of doing that because I feel like since I'm here and I can provide some education and some feedback where I'm from, where there's not many resources or opportunities to have like EBT here, and when I'm from, there's no such thing as EBT. So I see a lot of tears, I see a lot of pain when I see the houseless community. They just want a helping hand, so I figure I would do that for them.
And here, do you see all that pain and hurt and tears in Portland? Maybe I should say American also.
Yes, I see it as quite as much. Every time I come visit Portland or any other state that I come to visit, I see more and more homeless youth and families and single individuals, and it just makes me really sad. So every time I come back, I try to provide as much as I can.
So, and when you come back, you live in a houseless community, plus we won't disclose where else you live, but
you're
like me, you know, half houseless, half houses. So that way we keep things balanced.
And that's because, like, when I bonded with Right to Dream and the overnighters, which we call the houseless community, I feel like I need to stand right with the houseless community and say, well, this is my home too. I also have a home, but I'd rather hang out here and educate myself, but educate others and learn from those individuals and families that are houseless and see where they are at and where are they from and where they come from and why they choose to come to Portland and how can I help them or how can I help them in any means. That's the goal that our mission goal is to help those in need. And I feel like I need to do that. And I think that's good for my self-esteem, but also good for my life, good for my personality as well.
So in doing this, doing all these things that's good for you, which I always tell people, when you help somebody, you're really helping yourself. So,
yes.
So in feeling good and doing this, do you see that is this a tiresome, tedious work?
It is not tedious and tiresome work. It's actually fun work, and a lot of people should get involved in helping families and single individuals that are homeless, because not everyone is a criminal, which a lot of the word on the street is like homeless people are the most bad people of society, and that's not true. So if you go to Japan, you see a homeless person, a homeless camp, were you going to call them bad individuals? No, they just had bad luck in their lifetime. Everyone goes through that process. Everyone makes it and falls off, either due to economic problems or financial problems, or they can't hold a job because the job is not really steadied. So why are we being titled as criminals? And criminalization on houseless people, I think it's just unfair.
So being exposed to the houseless community for the first time, you saw some tear-jerking, sad things, and you immediately said, this is what I have to do. This is my call. What are you doing to help the houseless community?
Well, in my own spare time, I am a photographer, and when I travel around the world and I do my photography, I also try to come back, and each place I am, I always try to find an organization that will take either funding donation or something, a donation from me that they need. Like recently, we also brought a hot water heater for the Right to Dream so they can provide hot water 24/7. That was the mission. Or provide clothing, sneakers, clothes, blankets. If the Right to Dream or any other organization needed it, I would provide it because it's coming out of my own pocket. It's not coming out of no one else's pocket but my own. And I feel like if I do that, I'm making myself happy, I'm making everyone else happy, I'm having people to trust text me and said they can come to K-Kid and ask for some word of word or some advice about seeking a job. If they need help with employment, with the resume, I will help them do that, or help them with the computer skills or film or photography. Anything they need, I'm very good at it, and I'm very passionate about helping the people here, but I still feel like I'm still learning in the process. So,
what learning is, learning how to help them, or learning about houselessness and how different people become houseless and situation, and how the city officials deal with this. There's, they call it state of emergency, whatever. So it's always been an emergency.
Yeah, it always has
been. All of a sudden, it's the forefront. So let us, what you mean by you still learning?
What I mean by still learning is that I'm still learning because no one stops learning from being human. You learn different things from each and every other person. They are different in their own way. They tell me one story, one guy tells me another story. I implement those into, like, in my head, and I visualize what they are telling me. So each person has a story to tell, but it also educates me. I might not know something that I don't never know, and they know, and I was surprised about this. A lot of stuff I still don't know about American television, and that I still catch it up on. So when they talk about that, it makes me feel good that these single individuals and families are not afraid to talk to me or try to tell me, well, I'm happy. They always say this. They're happy and fortunate to have me here. And it's been a while. And some people that have been homeless for a while in Portland, every now and then when I come visit, every 4 to 6 months, they are really happy to see me, or they're looking forward to see what I have to offer in education-wise, like economics or mathematics or photography or, you know, even medical in that point of view.
So in doing that, coming back every 4 to 6 months, this time you came back, has the houseless population grown or has it dwindled?
I think it has grown, but I think that we should do more. I believe that we should try to, you know, look out for each and every one of us, because we are only human. We make our mistakes. We don't really, what I'm looking for, the words. But what I'm trying to say is that basically, like, the houseless community has gotten worse. More people are coming to Portland, or more people are trying to start over, and people are not giving, you know, people from another state a chance, and then trying to start a new, a fresh start. And I think we should help more. I think the city should help more and provide what the houseless community is asking for, like more assistance, more shelters, more new food, no more harassment from the police with the sweeps. And the sweeps still continue on, and I see it every night, and they said they stopped it, but they never do, because I'm always out at night taking photography, and I see it all the time, and it doesn't stop. And these people have nowhere to go, and when their belongings are taken from them, they have nothing, and they come right to Dream to restock up and or ask if we have a pair of shoes, or blankets, a bag, and I don't think that's fair. And I think that the city should do a lot more better. And if they can do a lot more better, then Portland would be a better city. It would unificate itself to where everyone is united, but not everyone is united on understanding the houseless problem.
So you're giving back because you came here. Your passport was stolen, and the houseless community really helped you out.
Yes.
So now you're giving back by coming back and educating them and helping them in any way, shape, form, or fashion that you can. Even talking to them helps people.
Yes, talking to them and helping them, or taking a walk with them, which I like to do. Like, hey, it's going to walk. I'm going to go to Starbucks, or you want anything from Starbucks? Or I walk with them and talk with them, or, you know, to have a conversation, understand where they're coming from, who they are, and not be discriminated, because we are a nonviolent and we do not discriminate against anyone. So everyone is welcome here or welcome in my presence, and long stay, understand that I'm here to help and not here to be a biased person and say, oh, homeless people are not good people. Homeless people are the best people. They bring out the light in all of us, and a lot of people should understand that.
Houseless people are reality.
That's yes.
It's real reality. Not main media reality.
No, not main media. But the reality that who we are is, it basically tells us, if we can fix one person's dreams and make it come to reality, that means we're doing something right. And that means that we are on the right path to doing something right for many others. And I feel like, just like the other day when the Martin Luther King March was going down Burnside, I saw this sign that said, "Your greed is my death." And I thought that touched me a lot because it's true. And I come from, I'm fortunate to come from a family that has, you know, economic funding. But what my own family doesn't understand is that you got to help people with your abilities, your riches. Yes. Your abilities, your privilege to help others. And my parents, even though I'm adopted, don't see it that way. I choose to go the other way and help people, and that's what angers some people. Like, why do you do what you do? And why you just take the time? Like, now, this time around, I've been here for 2.5 months. That wasn't the plan, but it seems like a lot of houseless individuals that come to the rest area are willing to either talk to me or want to see me, or I have bus passes for them. I give them bus passes. I make sure who I give them to, and make sure they get where they have to go. And I feel like I don't necessarily need to leave, but we need all the help we can get.
Okay. Any one last thing you want to talk about? The success you're doing with your photography, where you're going to be at next, or you got any shows coming up? I know you're making a bad commercial.
Actually, I just finished a commercial for Charlie's Deli, so if you guys are interested, you can go to Cinema 21 Theaters and watch it there. But you also can come to Charlie's Deli and try out his sandwiches. But yeah, I did finish his commercial, but I also do a lot of photography for clients or, you know, businesses that want prints or photographs for their business, or, you know, whatever they might want from me. But my success in my photography has been going pretty well. I luckily have been stable on that, and just living off my photography and also working for another company, or I would say government, on the side, which helps me provide what I need to provide the houseless community. So I think it's going pretty well. So
thank you very much.
Yes.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we are in Portland, Oregon, and Ground Zero in a houseless community. The topic is, where are they now? And today I'm here with
Lindsay Pickett.
Lindsay, how are you today?
I'm doing rather well.
Of course you've been homeless, but
yes.
How long have you been homeless, off and on, for a year, a day, or what?
I was homeless for quite some time. I was homeless for about a year and a half total. But while I was homeless, I was also trying to get myself back together. And I was working a full-time job. So I was able to get back on my feet rather well.
Wait a minute, you Grecian mythos. You said you was working while you were living on the street?
Yes. I had to be at work by 7 o'clock. So I would wake up at 4 and go take a shower at the facility up there that helps homeless people take showers. I would go up there and take a shower and then board the train and go straight to work from there. I was covering myself pretty well because nobody that I worked with knew that I was homeless.
So are you afraid that if they knew you was homeless, they wouldn't associate it with you, or you would have lost your job, or
they would have did
like children do, make fun of you or something?
Yeah, they would have just looked at me in a different perspective than they should have.
Why do you think people do that?
I don't know, I don't really understand it, looking at somebody differently just because of their housing situation. But a lot of people look at housing people as you know, like you're dangerous or whatever. And, you know, I'm sure some of them can be, but not everybody is that way.
But also people inside can be dangerous. So,
yeah.
I mean, if y'all see what I see, you see a beautiful blonde woman, and all the men are peeping in here, taking a peek at her. So it couldn't have been your looks, right?
Yeah, I know.
And she got a great smile and everything.
Yeah, thank you.
So I get to see, y'all just get to hear.
Right, yeah.
So in doing your houselessness, you resided at Right to Dream 2.
Yes.
And how has that helped you with your awareness of how once you lose your housing, you lose your rights?
I don't know.
Like, you know, when you lose your housing, you don't have no right to sleep because there's no place to sleep. You don't have no right to restrooms. There's no public restrooms.
Yeah.
Like you say, showers, or where's your alarm clock, or, you know, and even though you was afraid to let people know because you may have lost your job the way they would have, you know, predicted or screened you or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So did you learn that, or how would your perspective come out?
I did learn that. I mean, I just, I hate it because, like, I mean, I had it pretty good because, like, even though I was residing here, I still had somebody, you know, that was at the front desk doing security. I would have them wake me up. So, like, I really wasn't having to worry about any kind of alarm clock going off. But, I mean, the homeless community has definitely gotten worse since I was down here. And it just, like, it breaks my heart just to see everybody that's sleeping on the street and everything like that. I mean, it just, it's horrible. But I mean, I understand how rough it is. Like, people that I work with now are like, I don't know how they do it. And, you know, like, a lot of people, I don't express that, I was homeless, you know. I don't express that to some people. It's just certain people that know that about me. But I mean, I hear their perspective on it, and then I'm thinking, well, I know exactly how that person's feeling, you know, like, that's hard,
right?
You know, so, like, I definitely have a different perspective on it than a lot of other people, just because I have been homeless and I know how it is.
Right. And you said some important, interesting facts that, you know, you would cover up and close yourself well so people wouldn't know you was houseless. Mm-hmm. You would go and take a shower and groom yourself and look what the people perceive a person should look like.
Right.
You know, you was catering to their idea on how this is how you should be instead of just being yourself.
Right.
Were you comfortable in doing that?
I was, but I mean, I was catching a ride with a woman, and she would pick me up right across the street here at this gas station, and, you know, she just thought that I lived up in one of these apartments up here, you know. Like, she's like, like, it never came up that I was homeless. But, I mean, she did make a few comments about the homeless facility here. And I was like, man, I was like, you just can't judge those people, you know. Like, just because they don't have a house, you can't judge them like that, you know.
And so, even, you know, I don't care what nobody thinks about me. You know, they're not paying my bills. They're not feeding me. They're not clothing me. And plus, I'm not in the ideal, what you call it, a place where I had to cater. My work is the great outdoors. So, I can be myself. But people who's under that perimeter workplace and that is homeless, that got to be awful to hide you. I mean, when I mean hide you, that's hiding what you're about. I mean, you shouldn't be afraid. Yeah, I'm homeless, but I'm working, and I'm working my way to get established. But, you know, and with that fear that if somebody find out, you may get fired or something like that.
Yeah, no, like, I have trust issues anyway, so, like, that's why I don't reveal that part of me to a lot of people. But, like, once I get to know somebody and once I do, you know, gain that trust with that person, I have, you know, like revealed that part of me. Like, yeah, like when I first moved to Portland, I was homeless. I, you know, lost a lot of my clothes because I moved up here during the winter time when it was raining every day. And like a lot of my stuff got wet and mildewed and everything. I mean, even though I was homeless, I was still working and, you know, working my butt off with my full-time job, plus doing shifts here to, you know, make sure that this place stayed secure, you know.
So, do you think that, and I don't want this to be sounding leading, but do you think you would have been as successful as you've been if it wasn't for Right to Dream 2, where you can come sleep after you got off of work and stuff? If you were still in the street and they were not here.
No, I wouldn't have been able to, I wouldn't have been able to do what I was doing. I mean, I was at least getting, you know, sleep here, like security, you know, all that stuff. I'm thankful for Right to Dream too. I really am, because like if I hadn't been here, I would have lost everything and I wouldn't have been able to work, you know, because I wouldn't have had any clothes.
But this is Portland now. I mean, wait till you see the bicycle riders. Right, you know, yeah. They don't have clothes either.
I actually participated in that. And
really? Well, people, y'all, I'm telling y'all missed the sight.
Yeah, I did participate in that. That was awesome.
So, you inside now, and you're working, you're inside. You don't have to say what you're doing, but are you still coming down when you see a houseless people, a houseless person? How do you treat them? Are you talking to them? Are you engaging? Are you still recuperating? And then, you know, what are you doing now?
No, I'm very respectful to the houseless community. Like if, you know, one of them speaks to me, I speak back to them, you know. Like I don't just ignore them, because they are people. You know, they deserve our respect. Even though they don't have, you know, homes, they deserve our respect. I'm working as a CNA right now, so I'm taking care of the elderly, you know. So like a lot of people that I see down here have a lot of mental issues that I see at work every day. I mean, like I was saying earlier, it just breaks my heart, because those people really do need some sort of assistance, and they do deserve our respect.
So how do you think that this city, this state, this country can help the houseless community?
I mean, just like any house that's not being used or that's, you know, being like foreclosed on or whatever, I mean, the city, the state can turn those houses into, you know, facilities where, you know, the homeless can live. And like, I don't have any plan to have anything to do with the government, but if I did have something to do with the government, I would definitely make that part of the agenda to be like, okay, well, any buildings, any empty buildings, any empty houses, anything that's like a shelter, you know, make it into a facility. I mean, it doesn't have to be every single one of them, but, you know, like some of them, you know, I mean, just help. It's not like we don't have the money to do it. You know, like, even though they say we don't, we do.
It's, you know, everybody have money, but what they do with their money, that's count, right?
Right.
I mean, you see an alcoholic, he get money. He's going to buy alcohol instead of buying food, what we need to eat. So the government is buying alcohol instead of food, huh?
Yes. Yes. It's like, I don't understand it. Alcohol kills millions of people, and still it's, you know, legalized and everything like that, when we could be using that money for so much more better things than what we're spending it on now.
Okay. Is there any one last thing you would like to tell the listening audience about how you're transformed from houselessness to house and being productive in society?
It's difficult because, like, you know, when I was working full time, when I was homeless, like, I had money. I mean, I was homeless for some time down here while I was working. So I had money and everything, but now that I'm actually, you know, having to pay rent and everything, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I have caught myself thinking from time to time, well, you know, like, if I do lose my apartment, I can always go back to R2-D2, you know, like, I know I can go down there and be fine. So, I mean, I do catch myself thinking that sometimes. So
That's good. And I'm glad, and R2-D2 are glad that you use this facility to become successful. We're not saying that we have a monopoly on them. We just said we're in a meantime solution. And
yeah.
And that shows people that if you have a place to sleep and put your stuff that you can think about more mm-hmm. on getting productive.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Not Take a problem. Care. Thank you.
I want to give a special thanks to Roy, Loretta, Willow, Melissa, Charles, Kaiki, and Lindsay for coming on our show and giving us an update to where they are and what they are doing now. We send out to all of you much continued success and happiness. As your host, I need to let folks know how to contact Right to Survive. Pop in on Right to Survive meetings the second and fourth Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Northwest 6th and Davis in the Sisters of the Road Cafe. Like and friend us on Facebook. Email us at r2spdx@gmail.com. Or you can listen here on KBOO 90.7 FM. Watch our videos on YouTube. And please listen for new updates about Right to Dream 2 and give your support by coming to City Hall on the 18th to testify on their behalf. And one last item. The EPA will be opening up for comments and testimony in March or April. Portlanders need to have their voices heard, saying that lead, toxins, PCBs are not acceptable in our rivers or in our wildlife, and they need to implement solutions now to help the rivers in their recovery process. All right, one last song to close us out. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, and I'm saying until next time, Ma Salaam, and please be kind to people on the streets. Kindness comes back around. Good night. How can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I would do, you were standing there by my side. And now you gon' be with me for the last ride. Let the light guide your way. Thank you.
Is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Youth Summit, taking place February 12th and February 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club in Portland. February 12th will feature a workshop called Healing Ourselves to Raise Our Future and a performance by spoken word artist S. Renee Mitchell. February 13th will feature workshops on topics ranging from becoming an MC to healthy living to information on going to Africa. That evening, the summit will close with a youth talent showcase. Again, that's the Portland Youth Summit, February 12th and 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club, 5250 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at cabo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cebu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Wamba at the Analog Cafe, Friday, February 19th at 10 p.m. Wamba is a Portland-based band that mixes traditional West African rhythms from Ghana with jazz, funk, and Afrobeat styles. Friday, February 19th, there will be a special two-set performance. The evening starts at 10 p.m. at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne.